Hello and welcome back to episode 6 of the Fantasy Ramble. Now, on Spotify, we've managed to make the transition over and get our much-loved podcast over to Spotify, where we've managed to get all of our previous 5 episodes up and accumulate 8 listeners over the last 24 hours or so. So well done to everybody that's tuned in, considering the fact that just about all of them are going to be other than our immediate friend group. That's quite all right, but we'll move on from there. We've got a lot of football to talk about, both concerning last weekend and the following fixtures. A lot of action to talk about with the 12 games already having been played, and a fair bit to talk about with the games coming up. If you want to get involved with our conversation and our own league on the Fantasy Premier League website, you can do so with the code X1LJML. If you are listening to us on Spotify, hit the follow button to make sure you never miss a new episode of the show. And give us a follow on Twitter at Fantasy Ramble, where we will be talking about and putting out our predictions for the next batch of 10 games. Joining me today, we have two of our finest. We were meant to have 3, but Jamie McIntosh could not find his headphones, which meant that anytime anyone spoke, you would hear it twice. And trust me, you do not need to hear any of us more than once. Starting off, we've got Stu and Garvey. Hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
Very well, mate. How are you?
I'm very good. I had a very it was a pretty successful week in fantasy, but then you realise Graham's also in the league and it just doesn't quite look as good anymore.
Graham's just quite kind of swept it. But
it's almost Man City 2017-18 again, isn't it? It's almost that battle for second place.
Or Liverpool this year, you could consider.
Yeah.
But you broke 100 points, which is it's no mean feat. Not a lot of us have done that this year, if any of us have done.
I think that's the first time I've hit it all season, and I didn't even have like a bench boost, a free hit or anything like that. It was just a lucky double game week.
Graham did play his bench boost, I noticed, so maybe he wouldn't have been that lucky had he not. You had a bit of a late birthday present today with the announcement that your favourite player signed a new contract at your favourite club.
That was lovely news to wake up to today. Scott McTominay has signed a new contract with Manchester United until 2025 with an extension of a further year. Yeah, it's just really good. I'm really happy. He's like kind of being recognised now as a really good midfielder.
I'm always just going to remember him and you specifically after that one night we had in the Liquid Rooms where you just kept chanting his name. I'm not sure if you remember that, but I certainly do. So I'll remind you of it whenever you want.
Well, there's some unfortunate videos of me and Maga doing the same.
Right, so that's something we need for after the show and potentially the Twitter page. So we'll move on quickly and speak up to our second co-host for today, Mr. Taylor Murray. How are you, mate?
I'm all good. All good. It's a fine day. It's a good day.
Good day. Good day indeed. How have you been? How was your weekend in fantasy? This was probably a fairly strong weekend for you, all things considered.
Oh. It was all things. It didn't start off good. Everybody was on. I thought I had started off pretty well, sitting on like 32, or I think around 42 points. And then I realised everybody was sitting in 50, so I was like, here we go again. But I think I finished on like 87. I think I finished one above Raf.
You
did. So, you know, the king has been put down. I'm slowly coming for him.
Slowly. You're, what's that, 62 points off him just now.
Still, it's catchable. It's basically relegation. Like, I'm just trying to avoid relegation at this point.
I do like your optimism. It has
do we have
said.
Relegations? Sorry, you can't play next year.
Josh is almost 200 points behind you, so I mean, if there was relegation.
This is like basically the playoffs where essentially I just need to, it's like I'm basically just trying to avoid the playoffs, you know, just keep above there, pull Raph into the battle. Maybe he's not used to the battle like that. I can fight out this. I've got this.
You've got this. I've got faith in you, mate. We're not going to spend a lot of time talking about what's just happened at the weekend. What we are doing, though, is going to promote our collaborative article that's been put up on Energy Sport, where what our football writers are doing, they are going to be taking one opinion they've gotten over the batch of fixtures that come with every game week and putting them all together in just one takeaway, we're calling them. So our first takeaway article for Game Week 30+, as they're being known now, is up on Energy Sport today with takeaways from the three of us and Graham Sinclair as well. Jamie McIntosh and Raph Boyd will be getting involved in the future, I guarantee that. But what we're going to do, we're going to crack on with the first of the kind of three big games. What we're doing this week, rather than talking about all 10 games, we've got three of the biggest games of the fixture list, and we're going to go a bit more in depth into them. and then we're going to round up with three kind of smaller fixtures near the end of the show and finish with the Fantasy Team of the Week, which was a regular feature on our radio broadcast of this show back when we were still at university. Oh, it seems so long ago that we were at university. Jesus. One thing I will ask, Struan, what was your kind of biggest moment of the weekend?
Oh, I have to say, just watching the Man City goals last night against Burnley, it was genuinely just fantastic football to watch. Just based on every other game at the weekend, there was like scrappy passes. It was similar to the Bundesliga in the first one back. There was just a lot of misplaced passes. Players looked knackered in some games. But then just watching the Man City game against Burnley, I think every single goal you could say was superb, except the penalty, of course. But it was just really good to watch, and it was almost like, you know, City look like they've been back for weeks almost with that. I think that'd be, or I think I'd have to, just the Arsenal-Brighton game had about a million moments in it, and I'm not picking a side in the whole Leno Mopé debate, but I did quite enjoy the fact he went and scored a goal right in the 95th minute.
The latest ever goal Brighton have scored in top flight football.
You nearly couldn't write that. The guy who was involved in so much in the first half, then just sneaks it away right at the end. It was pretty incredible. So I think that would be my takeaway, Neil Mopai winning it at the end.
No, that's certainly a huge one to talk about. Taylor, what about you? Have you kind of shared an opinion with Struan, or have you got something different you'd want to highlight?
Neil Mopé, Leno, Arsenal. He just doesn't get any better than that for a takeaway, honestly. It's got everything. It's everything in it. You know, somebody smashes an Arsenal goalkeeper, he goes off injured, and then the guy somehow scores the winner. Guendouzi, and then Ferrato smashes him into the ground. It's just great, isn't it?
Guendouzi was saying that what was kind of revealed today, what Guendouzi had been saying to.
I did see that actually.
21 years. He kept saying to the Brighton players, "I'm 21 years old and I'm making more money than you ever will in your careers." When he's on less money a week than Mopé and Lewis Dunk.
Great fun.
We could talk about Arsenal for hours, realistically.
You could talk about that game.
There was, but
he also grabbed Mopé by the throat at the end of the game, but I don't think he's facing any punishment for it.
I know, he got off.
No, I think he got let off somehow.
He plays for Arsenal.
Didn't Fabregas get sent off for that against Chelsea, Man City a few years ago? Or was it Fernandinho got sent
Fernandinho
off for doing that?
Grabbed him by the neck and threw him threw him over the advertising boards. So
yeah, I remember that actually.
Sending off. That was just a chaotic end to that game. But
yeah, that was crazy.
We could talk about people grabbing each other by the throat all day, realistically, because it's entertaining. And we're going to save the Arsenal chat for Friday, hopefully, because I'm going to try and get Raf on again just to see, especially if Arsenal lose to Southampton. Not one of the games we're talking about today. The first game we are going to be talking about fully in depth is Spurs West Ham, the only real derby of the next set of fixtures. Looking back at the weekend there, Spurs held on to a 1-1 draw against Manchester United on Friday night, whereas West Ham lost 2-0 to Wolves on Saturday evening. A derby that tends to mean a lot more to West Ham fans than Spurs. Taylor, you'll know a lot about that. How do we see it going for both sides tonight?
I think I said last week the fact that West Ham look to have David Moyes in for the long run with his basically looking to do the RB Leipzig kind of state play with him by really, really highly rated youngsters and basically breed them through eventually into first team and basically give them the opportunity, not do what City do, basically buy youngsters and then loan them out and Chelsea. But I'm not going to lie, the way I look at it now is after watching that dreadful game of West Ham trying to play football, David Moyes, as long as he's there, West Ham are always going to be a relegation fight. Always. So, at this game especially, Spurs are going to win easily. I'm not even going to try to put any spin on it.
Oh, that's such an optimistic view. You just came in full of optimism about the league.
Oh, yeah.
Then you talk about West Ham and it just drains from you.
It's just, West Ham is, under Slaven Bilic, they had a great style about them where they actually played attacking football. Michael Antonio basically just turned into, you know, a semi-decent winger, right-back striker. He played everywhere. Payet was just, at one point, probably one of the best cams in the world playing for West Ham. You're like, what? You know, his free kicks were unreal. And then, obviously, it went downhill for probably Payet wanting to move. Him leaving, everything. Slaven Bilic getting sacked. I just don't even know. They need a manager to take them, like, to play positive football, and it will take them to the next level, possibly push for mid-table finishes consistently, I'd say.
Stuart, and we'll just take a quick look at Spurs here. Jose Mourinho, their manager at the moment, and we're talking about pragmatic managers. He kind of sets the bar. He'd been questioned by Paul Merson, I believe it was, just in the last few hours or so, about his history with strikers and pre-match press conferences, and he defended his past and present strikers to a fault almost. I mean, defended Didier Drogba so much he got his goals returned wrong under his management. But he was defending Harry Kane first and foremost. Considering how fiercely Mourinho was backing Kane, are we going to expect a positive reaction from him tonight?
I think so. I think in the United game, Kane's job was effectively defending his own 6-yard box from corners and balls in. I don't think he had a single shot on target in that game, but it reminded me a lot of when he was at United and players like Lukaku and Ibrahimovic and Martial and Rashford occasionally would just sort of fade out of the game in that type of one where you're just defending and you're hoping to just run and get a counter-attack. And I don't think that suits Kane at all. Because I just think the way Kane played with Pochettino, you know, when they were dominating the possession, how he could kind of drop into that number 10 role and the likes of Son running off him, I think that suits him to a T. But I think players like Bergwijn and Heung-Min Son will be so much better in a Mourinho system. The goal Bergwijn scored as well, you know, catching on the counter-attack. But I think Kane will come good. I think he has about 7-11 under Mourinho so far. And I think Mourinho did actually say he has the best striker. I can't remember whether he said in the league or in the world. Was one of the reasons why he came to Spurs. So I think he probably will look to build a team around Kane. I think the worry is probably more Kane wanting to leave more than anything else. But given his price tag, I don't think he'll be going anywhere.
No, I think I'd share that sentiment. I don't really think I could see anyone being able to move for Kane because they would be priced out of the move.
Yeah, given his injury record. I think he's 27 next month as well. Levy's wanting $200 million. I just can't see any team, not even Real Madrid, probably going for that.
Jesus.
I know.
I mean, football's 26, 27 years old, he's in his prime, realistically. But a lot of people, I had one of my friends who's a Spurs fan messaging me while watching the game saying he's never seen someone just as flatly run into the ground as Kane was at that game. So much so he was jobbing so far back, he ended up defending Bruno Fernandes at points. Are we expecting to see a different kind of outlook from Kane specifically this game? I don't know if it was maybe just getting back to fitness on Friday night or whether Mourinho had tasked him with lying deeper, but could you see them employing a different approach considering the size of this opponent compared to Manchester United?
I feel like it could. Maybe we're wrong, but it might have just been fitness, like match fitness. He just wasn't as sharp, and that's why he basically looks so done in. But you can't deny he's a prolific goal scorer, and he's a one season wonder that's done it now for like 6 years. So, I'm just maybe this is the game we'll see if Kane's actually running back up to it or not. That Man United game, he looks so done in. The fact he was defending Bruno Fernandes, who was just running the show for United that full game. He did not have an easy job, and that is definitely another break. That's probably broke him in more than any other player, I'd say.
Taylor, just come back to you quickly, just touch on West Ham once again. They've really, this season, had to face the fact that relegation is a real possibility now, and it's something that Graham had mentioned in his takeaway for Game Week 30. How do they now get themselves out of the situation if they can?
First of all, get rid of David Moyes. Nah, but in all seriousness, with David Moyes there, it's looking bleak. It's one of the ones where start the season, midway through, West Ham seen the troubles, but they look like, all right, we'll just get through the season and we'll address it during the summer. During the summer, they might be playing a championship, and yes, they've done it before championship and they've came straight back up. But looking at their running, they've got very few games you could say definitely win. They've got a game against Norwich and Burnley where you expect them to at least get 3 points out of six there. Watford, I think Watford will beat them. But then apart from that, they've got very, very hard games. The only other game that's a must win game that they should win is the very last game of the season, I'm pretty sure, where it's against Aston Villa, which could determine if they stay up or not. They just need to win the games where the teams round about them, and just anything from any other team is a bonus. That's what I'm saying. But with David Moyes at the helm, you don't know. Nah.
You just never know, do you? I can't see them getting rid of David Moyes before the end of the season, just because of the way the job market's going to be working with the pandemic, obviously. We'll wrap up with that game there with our usual score predictions and highlighting any key players for you all to bring into your fantasy teams ahead of this fixture. Taylor, I think you're resigned to the fact that it's going to be a Spurs win, but is there any Spurs players in particular you'd highlight for anyone's fantasy team?
For your fantasy team, and I would avoid Kane because he's a wee bit unpredictable right now. And just as much as he has a good goal scorer, this could be the game where he could bang in a hat-trick or he might just get one. I would avoid him because last game, but definitely your usual Son. He's just always like, he looks like he never runs out of steam. Like, he's honestly so fit and it's just like, ugh. But Son will be your probably key player and Spurs to win 3-0.
Spurs win 3-0, good shout that. Struan, are you going for the same kind of thing, a Spurs victory?
Yeah, I've gone for a 2-0 Spurs victory. I think the first time these met, I think Spurs were 3-0 up. And they lost it, or they drew. They won 3-2, I think it was in the end.
Mourinho's first game, I think that was. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've gone for a 2-0. I think it could be a very similar tactic setup to United. I think they'll probably try and nick a goal very early on, and then sit back and then catch another one on the counter. Probably because I think West Ham will be going for it. I mean, their defense against Wolves was so poor. I mean, Declan Rice playing not out of position, but not in his preferred position, was probably their best player that game, in my opinion.
Another player I would say by was Bergwijn. I completely forgot about him. Even though he scored, you know, big Stevie Wonder, even though he scored against Man United, I completely forgot. And he's had a no bad return. He did pretty well before he got injured, so I'd stick him in your team.
Yeah, he scored against City as well, I think. Yeah.
He's only been involved in 6 game weeks so far, and he's accumulated 33 points from 6 game weeks, and at 7.4 million. He's a cheaper option for your midfield. Another midfielder that you might want to consider coming back in after a one-match suspension is Dele Alli. He really looked good when Mourinho first took over. He got 2 in the 3-2 victory at home to Bournemouth, I remember, and he's kind of been in amongst the goals since then. His last game, he got a goal against Burnley in the 1-1 draw. So I think he could come good again. I think he is going to be quite an important player for Spurs going into the last 7 fixtures, so, or 7 or 8 fixtures. So I would keep an eye on him. I'm going to go for... I'll go for 2-0 as well. I think it's going to be a fairly comfortable Spurs victory. I think Mourinho will get the goal early on and then just sit and let West Ham tire themselves out before nicking another one in the second half. We'll move on from one real derby to one fake derby from Struan Garvey's mind. He's called the United Derby when there's more than two Uniteds in the league. But we'll move on from that because we've got Manchester United versus Sheffield United tomorrow night, or tomorrow afternoon. Manchester United, we've just spoken about getting a draw with Spurs on Friday night, whereas Sheffield United have played twice since restart and have dropped 5 out of possible 6 points, only picking up 1 in the process, as they drew 0-0 with Aston Villa and then lost in uncharacteristic fashion to Newcastle United in a 3-0 defeat. Struan, we'll come to Manchester United first, as I'm sure you'll be very keen to talk about a certain midfield partnership. They almost got the win over Spurs before VAR stepped in, but I think all of us could agree that it was never a penalty on Fernandes. Fall backwards over it and made the most out of the situation, I would say. Speaking of him and his potential midfield partner, Paul Pogba came on in the second half and really changed the game. United looked so much more threatening with Pogba and Fernandes on the pitch. Going forward, soon, what can we expect from a midfield with both of these players involved?
I think a lot more possession-based games. There's been a few times this season where the back three or five, however you want to call it, has been played, and it's been very much similar to that Mourinho style of play, just catching on the counter. Because most of the season, Pogba and Bruno Fernandes have not even been within the squad at all, and it's been the likes of Pereira and Lingard getting used. But I think now Solskjaer has that ability to play more the way he wants. Mm-hmm. He's got those tools at his disposal now, but I think there is going to be a problem in picking the team for this game, because I think he got it quite wrong against Spurs. I don't know why Pogba didn't start. I mean, they probably expected Tottenham to be a bit more attacking, being the home team and whatnot, but the way they sat down, waiting for an hour to sub on Pogba as well, which didn't think Dan James didn't look like he was up to much. And then the goal, you could make four individual errors from the players there. So it's one of those games when you look back and when, I'd say, United don't get top four at the end of the season, you look back and you think that was a very winnable game. Because other than the Bergwijn goal and the Son header, Spurs didn't really create much all game. And I think this game against Sheffield United could be very similar. I think the back five will be deployed. There won't be any John Egan. O'Connell and Jagielka are also doubts, and there's not going to be any Dean Henderson. But I think Pogba and Bruno Fernandes will have to play. Otherwise, I fear for Ollie's job at that point, really, if he neglects to play them again. And yeah,
you mentioned the goal, and I think you knew I was always going to talk about this, because Roy Keane certainly had a lot to say at halftime for David De Gea and Harry Maguire, but more specifically David De Gea. And Stuart, you were the one that had a bigger and a more in-depth look into De Gea's time at number one and how he's kind of been on a steady decline for the last couple of seasons. Talk us through what De Gea needs to do in the last few games to make sure that Dean Henderson doesn't come in and just snatch the number one shirt from him.
I think he needs to make saves. I know that sounds very silly to say, but he's not been doing that this season. In the article I mentioned, you know, he cut his cost points against Crystal Palace, Watford, both games against Everton, and now Spurs. That goal, you could say, you know, Luke Shaw, he was silly heading it back. Harry Maguire got turned. Fred just, for some reason, wasn't tracking back, making the tackle properly. You know, I don't like to say make a tactical foul, but sometimes. But all those things could happen. And it was a shot straight at De Gea. I think Ollie was saying the ball was moving all over the place, but it's in De Gea's centre, and he powers it into the net. It's very similar to one against Palace. I think De Gea's always had a problem. He's never been great distribution. You know, the likes of Ederson, who's just phenomenal. We can basically play anywhere on the pitch just with his passing ability alone. Commanding his box has always been a problem as well. Apparently the people at the side of the game were saying he wasn't vocal at all throughout the game, which is a bit worrying from your goalkeeper not commanding his area or whatever like that. And I think the shot stopping, you know, in the likes of 2017-18, he almost looked like a robot. He could reach every single corner. But then, after the World Cup, he's just had a very steady decline. I don't think it helps that Henderson's there. I think if Henderson wasn't there, there wouldn't be as much of a pressure on him, almost to get him out. But I think United fans are now saying, oh, look at how good Henderson's been in the league and the Championship last season. You know, he's coming on, he's very young, he's good with his feet. When you compare the two of their stats as well, you know, Henderson's playing in a worse team behind a worse defence. But then you could also say, you know,
slightly worrying though, if De Gea is a wee bit nervous about Henderson. Basically, the first bit of competition he's ever had, and he seems to be crumbling.
Yeah, I think it's similar to the Spain situation as well. I mean, he's been waiting for Casillas to retire. You know, he's finally gotten that. And then you've got Kepa coming through, who has been preferred to him a few times, mentioning playing out from the back has been a lot better. So I think his Spain position is up for grabs, and I think the United position is also up for grabs. But Henderson had a really good game against Aston Villa, a bit shaky against Newcastle, so it's kind of, you know, that it was almost good in a sense he had that bad game against Newcastle, because it meant, you know, okay, I mean, De Gea maybe isn't so bad. But at 29, is De Gea really going to get much better? I mean, he could find his form again, but there's just that doubt over his head that I don't know, Ollie called him the best goalkeeper in the world, but I don't even know if I could put him in the top five in the Premier League at the moment. I really think you could pick five keepers better. And you just look at the saves Lloris was making. The one against Rashford earlier on, the one against Martial really late on. Those are the kind of saves that De Gea would have made in the reverse fixture last season. But yeah, I think he will keep the job. He's got a huge contract, which I think was a silly decision to give. I think he's nearly 400 grand a week. It's in the 300s, which is just crazy. I don't think he's ever going to take the captain's armband as well, based on how little he speaks, how poor he is from the box. And it's United have conceded three goals in the last 12 games. And out of those three goals, there was the one against Spurs, which you could say was his fault, the one against Everton, in which he kicks the ball off Calvert-Lewin. And then the other one was a mistake against Club Bruges from Romero. So it's kind of like, you know, those could effectively be 12 clean sheets in in that sense. But I think he will get the rest of this season, and based on the opposition, the run in United have got, they should be dominating most games. And I think Gary Neville said it in the Everton-Liverpool game. He made a point about Alisson, that the best keepers keep their concentration the entire game, even when nothing's happening. So when a shot eventually comes, they're ready.
Yeah.
And it just didn't happen with De Gea. You know, the first time Tottenham came forward, he just couldn't get his hands sorted, and then it just went in. But anyway, I've rambled enough now.
Well, it is a fancy ramble, so I think you're doing the show's name some justice there. You made a point about that De Gea's behind a better defence, but I would argue that point, especially this season when Sheffield United have been the second best defence in the league, conceding only fewer goals than what Liverpool have done. And we'll move on to them just now, because it was an uncharacteristically bad day at the office for their backline against Newcastle on Sunday afternoon. They shipped three goals and had a man sent off. The two results back to back, a 0-0 draw, which they look back on and it absolutely should have been a 1-0 victory when Orion Nyland basically carried the ball into his own net, and then Michael Oliver's watch flashed with the goal at half time.
Unbelievable.
You look at that, followed by the 3-0 loss, and they're short results considering how well Sheffield United have been playing this season. Taylor, if they are to secure a European place that they've been chasing for so long in this season, what needs to change for the rest of the games going forward?
Well, I know what needs to change. This is it. I'm telling you. First of all, Stevens needs to learn to kick a ball. He needs to learn to stand to the feet and put the ball out the park. He needs to learn to put it in the park. How a professional football player can set a ball standing come to him and completely miss it? Oh no, there is, you know. He should have looked over. He knew St. Maximin was here, right? So he knew someday St. Maximin ability. St. Maximin could probably get that rainbow flag out of his head, right? But the fact he knew he was behind him and he still missed it, like, oh my god. I had to get that out. That really frustrated me.
Change a Timo Werner in again.
Honestly, no. Like, how did a professional football player? That's up there with a pet hate hitting the first man for a corner. Seriously, he literally was standing his 2 feet. All he had to do was get any connection on it and just send it to Rose Ed. But no. But anyway, what Sheffield need to do is probably put Woodstrom back in. I'm not going to lie, I feel like he is actually such a key player for Sheffield United. I know Sander Berg came in and he's a big money signing, but he just doesn't give what Woodstrom had been given. He's just, Sander Berg just seems to be so passive on the ball, and it's really frustrating. But Lidstrom basically gives you, he's more attacking, try to go forward, tries to make stuff happen. He might even not have the ability what Sander Berg has, but you know, what he lacks for ability, he does have for basically a drive to go forward, create chances. And all you have to do is just look at your fantasy team to see exactly how key Lidstrom has been to Sheffield.
I mean, Lundstrom's been key. The point that I wanted to make about Sheffield United, especially after the Villa game, I thought they severely missed John Fleck to be that outlet of creativity. But then he came in and it was the same kind of story. I think he didn't have Lundstrom because he replaced him, and then they were still lacking the creativity. So I think their creative midfield comes from both of them and, surprisingly, Jack O'Connell. Because when he's in, he just looks a lot more at home in that system that Chris Wilder likes to play, where the centre-backs do get forward and they do get involved in the attack. And from what I've seen of Sheffield United, Jack O'Connell tended to be the one that would step up into midfield and kind of allow Fleck and Lundstrom to push forward. So I think they're really lacking that option to have O'Connell in that can really push them forward in as an attacking team. But with this game, I don't know how to call it. I think it's, personally, I'm going to see it as a narrow Man United win. I think I'm going to go 1-0. I think it'll be just one goal in it, because they will sit resolute. I think Wilder might try and play for the draw, especially without Dean Henderson in the starting 11, because he's ineligible. And without both John Egan and Jack O'Connell, it's going to be a real makeshift back line that we've not really seen from Sheffield United this season. But That's my view of it, Struan. Are you expecting a bigger win for United as the fan, or are you kind of being fairly realistic about it as well?
I've actually gone for 3-0 United. I don't always back them as we know, but I've realised this game is so important. There's a few injuries, and you know, Henderson's out, Egan's out, O'Connell, as you said. I think this is one of those games you have to take for the take, and Sheffield United have come back so poor from the break. Them and Arsenal are probably the two who have looked the worst coming back. Norwich coming back, they just almost, you can just see how much they miss the crowd at Bramall Lane and whatnot. And I think they didn't rely on form, because I think Chris Wilder has done a great job, but I think their form was helping them a lot. I think if these two games had happened before the break, they'd have probably beaten Aston Villa and Newcastle.
Yeah.
In which case, because they've had two opportunities to actually move into fifth in both of these games, and they could probably be putting the pressure on the top four, but I think they haven't come back the best. I think there's not that much pace in the team for a counter-attack to run, so I think the United defence should be able to cope with that. I think De Gea hopefully will have a point to prove, and I just think Bruno Pogba, it'll be such an attacking, because if the United need to win, you know, for a top four, I don't even think a draw is good enough with the likes of Wolves coming up behind as well. But as you said, I could also see Sheffield United playing for a draw, which could be an incredibly boring game, but I've gone for a 3-0 to United. And Manchester United.
To the Manchester United. Are you, take it, it's going to be Bruno and your team again?
I don't actually have Bruno in my team.
Oh.
No, I took him out for the Tottenham game because I just felt Mourinho was going to park the bus. I don't actually have a single United player in my team, but I would say, you know, Bruno Fernandes is one. You know, Man United have had so many penalties this season. He's the taker. Other than him, you'd probably want to look at maybe a Rashford or a Martial. I wouldn't put Greenwood or James because you never know who's going to start.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even put Pogba because I genuinely don't know if he'll start. You just never really know. I think Bruno, Rashford and Martial are the three you want to take. I wouldn't touch a defender because I don't think they'll have much to do at all. I would stay miles away from David De Gea.
It's Rashford I've brought in actually, because as we're about to get on to, there's a certain striker that is out for his next game, and Rashford has come in to replace him. That means I've got 3 million sitting left in my budget that could be redistributed, but I'm not wanting to risk the 4-point deduction to do that at the moment, especially when I'm trying to catch you, Struan. Taylor, are you thinking something similar, or do you think Sheffield United have a bit of a chance here?
I feel Sheffield United have just came back the worst, as Struan said, and I don't know if it's maybe the lack of fans or just match fitness, but they're just not looking the best. So I think United's got to run the 2-0 winners. I'm not going to say comfortable, because Sheffield United will make it hard for them, but 2-0, a comfortable win in the end, but a 2-0 win where probably a couple of scary chances for Sheffield to score, but you know, McBurnie will only score them because it's McBurnie. going with the team, I would avoid, I'd take Dean Henderson out because can't play against Man United, but ideally I'd want to take Baldock out, who I've got in my team.
Mm-hmm.
But it's either him or Van Aanholt to go in, and since Crystal Palace are playing, you know, the league leaders, I'm not really fancying that. So I'll take the chance to keep Baldock in, even though I don't want to take a 4-point deduction either. But Fernandes 100% should go in. His return since he's came to the Premier League is unreal. He's basically dropped like a 9-6-10-14-6, and he got a 2 the last game.
He's one man of the match in every Premier League game he's played in.
He got 2 his first game, but ever since then he's never dropped basically below a 6, which is incredible.
I can see
him definitely getting a score sheet on Wednesday?
Wednesday. I mean, he has done well, but BBC put him in their team of the season after 5
games.
I could not believe that. That was so funny.
Unwarranted.
5 games.
He doesn't deserve that. It's like 5 games.
I think he probably will make the Portuguese team of the season, though, because he already had 10 plus goals and assists before he moved in January.
Yeah.
I think he was the most impressive midfielder in that league beforehand, but I don't think the BBC can count that.
This is coming from a league that sacked a manager after 5 games, so...
Yeah, you know. This is true. Five games means a lot. Shout out De Boer, whatever he is, just now.
Aye, so...
Did he not only get 4?
Was it? It was four or five.
Four or five.
Was it not only four for De Boer?
Four for De Boer. No, I think he must have had like he must have had five.
I think he had five because I'm pretty sure it was a defeat to Southampton. I can't remember.
I remember he slagged off Mourinho for not using Rashford properly or something, and then Mourinho was like, "Yeah, but you've been sacked after four games." I'm not taking that viewpoint into consideration.
it's a very fair viewpoint to not take into consideration. Yeah. We'll move on from that game. We've kind of talked more about Bruno Fernandes than I certainly would have liked to, but that always seems to happen when we talk about United. Our final game is someone that I do like talking about, maybe not in these circumstances. We've got Chelsea playing Manchester City in potentially the biggest game of the game week on Thursday. Over the weekend, Chelsea managed to claw back to a 2-1 victory over Aston Villa in a game which they dominated most of the ball but did not really make enough chances to make it worthwhile. While City scored 8 goals across 2 games and have got me feeling very, very frightened, considering they didn't concede either. As we just hinted to talking about the last fixture, the biggest news with this game on Thursday comes after the Burnley game last night, where Sergio Aguero is ruled out of this game on Thursday. Struan, how big is this for both clubs, talking about it from both viewpoints here?
I think it's a huge loss for City, huge gain for Chelsea. I think you could see Aguero was being rested for this, didn't start against Arsenal, and then was going to play against Burnley, but I think he would probably have been subbed off 60th minute or something like that. I think as almost he was getting the minutes, because I don't think Jesus would play in that, but I think this is going to be a huge loss. Goals guaranteed, basically, but I just think the squad depth at City is so good.
I would argue it, because I don't rate Gabby Jesus whatsoever. I don't think he's a worthy deputy to Aguero, and I think they just look a bit more blunt up front with Jesus, because I just don't think he's suited to the league.
I'd agree. I think if you put Jesus in another team that's not as good as City and dominant, he probably doesn't score 10 a season.
No, absolutely
I think
not.
His finishing's poor, his positioning's okay. He works a lot up and down the pitch, but there's a reason that Aguero at 32 is still, you know, miles ahead of him in the pecking order.
He's clear. He's so
clear. Did you see his attempt to score for Foden's second?
I think he laid that off on purpose.
I don't think that was the purpose. I think that was a genuine shot, because I don't think he knew that Foden was there.
I couldn't believe he didn't take that shot. I didn't even see Foden from watching the watching it on TV. I couldn't even see Foden. I thought, oh, he's going to put his foot through this. I was like, hang on, has he missed it? And then I just saw Foden coming in. I thought, that is just beautiful.
Basically, Mahrez came in for the right, tried to cut it back to Jesus. Jesus scuffed the shot and fell at the back post to Foden, who just tapped it in. I was like, you meant to shoot there. I knew for a fact you meant to shoot.
Yeah, no, I think the circumstance more than anything, he's a striker that's been lacking goals and needs a couple for his confidence. I don't think he would have wanted to have laid that off. that's just my view of it.
That's
anyway.
True. In a team like he is in as well, you'd think, you know, they've scored more goals than anyone this season. You know, they dominate a game 5-6 is nothing, and he really doesn't pick up goals.
Yeah,
I think City probably would look for another striker after Aguero. I think it's nice to think he'd be next, but I just don't think he'll ever be as good. It's just such a downgrade. Like, Jesus is good, but I mean, you're going from world-class Aguero, and especially the wings as well, the likes of Sterling, Mahrez, Bernardo Silva, Phil Foden coming through. It's just such a strong team. You just don't want that weak point.
You mentioned Phil Foden there, and he has probably been the beneficiary of Pep Guardiola's tinkering with the lineup. They've really made use of their squad depth over the last two games, which has infuriated all of us, considering that Aguero and De Bruyne weren't playing in both. But he's been the main beneficiary. He scored 3 times across the two games. Granted, the first goal he scored in the Arsenal game was a rebound off of an Aguero shot, but right place, right time. With Silva set to move on once his contract expires at the end of the month, Taylor, how important is it for Foden to get the game time under his belt just now to be able to secure his place in the team going forward?
I feel like it's really important. He showed the talent that he has, and just exactly the game against Burnley shows what his ability possesses. If he gets a good run of games, by the way, he can replace David Silva 100%. That means City basically have have not even had to fork out a whole load of money to basically replace somebody Silva's quality. So that's, I think Guardiola gives him his run of games. It might actually turn out to be that he might be irreplaceable, as Pep Guardiola said, just depending on if Guardiola will give him the time.
He definitely does have the talent. I know for a fact he's got the talent, and he will be. He'll probably take the place of Dele Alli, you would think, or the likes of Maddison and Grealish in the England setup. He could be another player given the game time should be considered for those positions. Another player who could be considered for those positions is Mason Mount, who, up until Christian Pulisic's introduction, was, in my opinion, one of only two players who were really having a good game against Aston Villa. Lampard fielded a widely unexpected lineup, I think we could say, when you look at the players that Chelsea had on the bench, with the likes of Abraham, Pulisic, and Reece James. For me personally, I saw it as a we play City in 4 days lineup, but I suppose with that in mind, Struan, are we going to expect a completely different lineup on Thursday night from Chelsea and Lampard, in the sense that they're probably going to be going for a stronger and more direct approach?
Yeah, I think it will be a much better, different squad against Man City. I don't think. I think as you said, the one against Aston Villa is being played with Man City in sight. I don't think Giroud would start.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think. I think he's better in a game. Chelsea are going to be dominating. They're going to have a lot of the possession. I don't think that's necessarily going to be the case against City. Yeah. I think midfield wise will be quite similar.
Mm-hmm.
Often, and then I don't really know about the defence. I thought Reece James would play against Aston Villa, just because I thought maybe Azpilicueta would be used in the bigger game, but I guess he could play off the left and Reece James on the right is also, there's a possibility. But that was one of the few games at the weekend I didn't actually see much of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of saw what was happening through my phone and stuff like that, and just knowing Chelsea were dominating possession, and I think it is going to be a really good game against City. I think, you know, it's difficult to play against City, but I've seen Chelsea have dominated possession nearly every game they've had this season. They tend to dominate possession a lot, and I think that's something Man City do as well. So I think it'll almost be down to the managers in a sense. Mm-hmm. You know, one of them probably want to set up defensive. You'd imagine it would be Chelsea in a sense. But they used the back three quite well. I mean, Marcus Alonso was very effective as a wing back. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I'd be interesting to see if he does go for the back three approach like he did in both matches against Mourinho's Tottenham earlier in the season. When it comes to a prediction for this one, I think I've got to be pessimistic, if I'm honest. I can't see Chelsea walking away with a win in this one. I would be absolutely ecstatic if they did, because that would really, really help their case for a top four finish. I'll be slightly more optimistic. I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw in this one. I think Chelsea do have the attacking talent to be able to really run at the City backline. When you think of the likes of Abraham, Pulisic, whether Hudson-Odoi will be back into the fold, I'm not sure. I'm not currently sure what the situation with Pedro and Willian is concerning their contract extensions. I know both have an intent to move on at the end, but whether that carries on into the rest of the season, I'm not sure. But I just think City are far too good to go down to even lose this game. I cannot see City losing this game, to be honest. Taylor, are you the same? Do you think it's going to be a fairly City-dominated game, or have Chelsea got a chance in this one at all?
I think it could be a City-dominated game. Just City will just look like they were back on song against Burnley, and that was where we can side. So think about De Bruyne. Although Aguero is missing now, and it was updated that he is travelling back to Barcelona because he's done damage to his knee.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that could hamper him a little bit. But, you know, with Mahrez looking amazing, Sané now back to fitness, you've got Sané, Sterling, De Bruyne. It's not looking good. I think it could be a City win. I'm going to go with a 3-1 with probably Mahrez still running the show again.
So he'd be our first name in your fantasy team.
Oh yeah. If you're putting a fantasy team in, I know it's Pep rotation, but for your fantasy, I would 100% put Mahrez probably in right now, and De Bruyne. If you don't have De Bruyne in, I don't know what you're doing, but
very true.
I'd say Mahrez is definitely a good shout to put in now. Probably replacing Manny, I'd say.
Okay.
That's a bold statement, I'm saying.
That's a very bold statement. Struan, are you the same ilk? Are you going to be going for a City win here with a Mahrez and De Bruyne inspired performance?
I've actually gone for 2-1 Chelsea, and the reason why I've gone for this is almost motivation and passion. I think where City are at the moment in the league, they're basically sick. They're going to be sick, and there's not much else there. They can't really break many records, and they've got the Champions League as well coming up. Obviously, that's not really going to interfere. Yeah. They've got the FA Cup. I think Pep would probably rather just get more trophies. I think the league's almost sorted, but I think in the position Chelsea are in, you know, they need to win. They need to get that top four. You've got Wolves, Man United, Sheffield United all coming up behind. You know, this is a game that on paper should be a City win, but I think it's almost one of those games the Chelsea players will want it more. And I could just see, basically, well, not a City down in tools, but I could just see Chelsea giving it far, far more. So I've gone for a 2-1, and I've gone for Christian Pulisic. I think he was very good against Aston Villa and before he got injured, I think. Mm-hmm. It will just be one of those games where I think the Chelsea players will, every single player would probably give 100%, 110% if they will. And then, yeah, I think they would. I think this is a game they could win. And especially without Aguero as well, I think that's a huge loss to City. Just having that talisman up front, as we said earlier, I just don't know if Jesus is going to be able to really perform, but you never know.
It's a big call, and especially one that sees none of us agree on a result for this game, which is an interesting thing to think about. Well, that kind of wraps up the three biggest games that we're going to talk about. Now I'll just kind of give three further games that have a bit of weight to them going forward, and we'll just do a quick opinion on both. So with the first game of that being Leicester-Brighton, which is the first game that kicks off tonight, with this one, Leicester are looking to solidify a top four finish, and it was stalled slightly after their 1-1 draw at Watford, which saw two of the best goals of the weekend scored all in the last 5 minutes. Whereas Brighton, they looked impressive against Arsenal. I know we've had conversations about Graham Potter trying to put a cemented style on Brighton's style of play now, and they hadn't won in 2020. That changed thanks to Neil Maupay. Taylor, how do we see this one panning out, just quickly?
Brighton could be in. They seem to be probably getting a bit of a buzz for what they've done to Arsenal, but yeah, again, it is Arsenal, so you know, it's probably expected. That's probably 3 points they've seen coming. But I think they could be good. Leicester just don't seem to be performing that well right now. They've not been doing too well. They've been on a downslope probably since the start, end of February, start of March. But this could be a tight one. Probably, I think I went with a 1-1 in fact.
I think I'd probably echo that, actually. I'd probably go for a draw.
Yeah, it could probably be a draw.
Hopefully Brighton can kind of solidify themselves the way they did against Arsenal. Struan, just a quick one on this game. Are you thinking something similar? Or?
I've gone for a 3-1 Leicester. I think they'll be a bit worried, the likes of Chelsea and United coming up behind them as well in the league. And their form has been very poor, but I think this is a very winnable game for them. I think Vardy will want to get his 100th Premier League goal and just get off the mark. But I could see Brighton probably nicking one from a corner of that. Leicester didn't look great defensively against Watford. I mean, until Chilwell scored that goal, I thought he was very poor. And Justin on the other side looked good as well. I think Ricardo Pereira is probably the biggest miss of that back line. I think he's the best defender. Yeah. I think having Ndidi back helps as well quite a lot. But yeah. I mean, when Demarai Gray came on, they just looked a much, much better side. So I'd expect him to probably start over all Brighton. Maybe Iosé Pérez coming in as well, but I think they'll get back on track with this game. They need to.
they do need to, you're absolutely right. The next game that I've put down here is Wolves-Bournemouth, because obviously we've got Wolves gunning for Europe and Bournemouth in a real relegation battle. A lot to play for both teams here. Struan, is there anything to suggest Bournemouth could take a result here? I mean, looking at their game on Saturday night against Palace, they were almost non-existent as Palace just kind of strolled to a 2-0.
It's not a chance. Bournemouth are going down. There's absolutely no hope of them staying up, in my opinion. I just watching that game. Now, Palace are a good side. I'm not trying to slag them off, but they just looked awful. Mm-hmm. Bournemouth, that is. They just looked poor all over the place. Going forward, I just didn't know if they were going to even create a chance. I think losing Ryan Fraser is huge, but it is what it is. They got Brooks back, who looked good. He looked better than the rest of the players, but then he gave away the free kick, which Milivojevic, fantastic free kick, by the way, put into that one. And then the counterpart Wolves looked phenomenal against West Ham. They just looked so fit. Bringing Traore and Neto off the bench as well was almost a bit unfair, you know, for the West Ham defence. Cresswell had been dealing all game with the likes of him and his Doherty overlapping, and then you've just got Adama Traore coming on. It's just like, oh, well, yeah, what am I supposed to do here?
It's a cheat code.
It literally is. It's like on FIFA when you sub on one of your 99 pace subs or something Ryan like Kent. That. Exactly. It is a real life version of Ryan Kent there.
I think Ryan Kent's a real life version of Ryan Kent, to be honest.
I don't know if he's as good as Ryan Kent in FIFA, I can't lie. But and the goal Neto scored was arguably the goal of the weekend. It was, yeah, just such a nice build up, and they just leathered it into the back of the net. I think I've gone for a 4-0 Wolves. I just think they will absolutely dominate. I just can't see Bournemouth.
I like
they
that.
Just look. Do you know when like a team has been in the league for a few years, but then you're just like, hang on, they're down in tools a bit, you know, like West Brom a few years ago. It was like, yeah, the kind of in that fight, but it's just they've done as much as they can, and now they're just kind of regressing. I think, yeah, they just looked a team that was pretty much ready to accept the championship. I think Ryan Fraser not signing an extension or wanting to play these games as well, I think it speaks volumes, not only for himself, but just the fact that I don't even think he has confidence the club's going to stay up.
Who would you say is the worst team in the relegation zone, bar Norwich, would you say?
Who do you think is more
likely to go down, West Ham, Bournemouth, or Aston Villa? Aston Villa and Bournemouth, sorry, who do you think is the worst team out of them?
I think Aston Villa have a very poor defence, but I think they've got enough going forward in the likes of Grealish and some other players like Agassi, McGinn. I think they've got a slightly better squad, but I just think Bournemouth just look awful. I mean, Solanke came on the pitch again, and I think he took like one shot. I think they've relied so much on Callum Wilson recently.
Because Bournemouth are sitting in the same place as West Ham, and West Ham are sitting in 17th, 27th, because Aston Villa is a point behind. So it's quite weird how the league does that. Like, Bournemouth just look like they've actually given up Aston Villa, like they could stay up, but
yeah.
Taylor, are you going for a comfortable Wolves win as well?
Oh yeah, comfortable Wolves win, oh, without a doubt. Bournemouth, just as I'm echoing what Struan said, just look like they've gave in. So I'm going 3-0 Wolves with Jimenez to get on the score sheet, possibly get two.
I really enjoyed his goal. It was so simply done. Like Adama just crossing it in and like a solid header, but it was just so simple but so just well executed for me that it was really just memorable. I don't know why. Now, that's just a random point to make, but I would say, yeah, Jimenez is an absolute definite to put in your team. Traore as well. I know he came off the bench, but he still netted 4 points from the assist and the time he played as well. So at 5.7 million, you can't really go wrong. Last game I want to mention is the return of a fan favourite. And I say a fan favourite, but it's us, so we're the fans. Brexit Game of the Week is back.
Yes.
Also known as the shithouse game of the week, but we can't say that. We can't say that word on the radio, but we can do it in a podcast infrequently, so we can get away with that. Burnley Watford. I don't think there's a game that screams Brexit more, unless you have like Millwall or someone in there.
I think this is nearly the perfect Brexit game in the Premier League at the moment.
It really is, isn't it?
The only one I could say that could top that would be the only one I can say that could top that would be probably Millwall West Ham, when if they ever get in the same week. Like, that's just the definition of Brexit.
I mean, there's movies made about that, so I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
As for this game, for me, 0-0 written all over it. Watford looking the most likely to stay up out of the bunch at the bottom at the moment, which Jamie would have had a lot to say on that if he'd been able to stop our voices bouncing back off his. For me, Burnley just look toothless against Manchester City, and I don't see it being any different against Watford, considering how well they've been playing under Pearson. Boys, are we going for a similar kind of thinking again here, or am I missing something completely?
I've gone 0-0, as I literally don't think either team has a goal scorer. I mean the Watford goal, a bicycle kick from Craig Dawson.
Unbelievable.
and I think without Wood and Barnes, that Burnley was Vidra and Jay Rodriguez were playing against City, and they'd have been as well, just, you know,
not
sitting on the bench, keeping it nice and warm, because they were non-existent.
Absolutely.
I think Burnley rely so much on their set pieces, and I think Watford are quite similar. They just didn't look like they were going to score. Ismaili Sarr is a really exciting player to watch. End product's a bit weird, but I just don't know if Troy Deeney is going to necessarily have much. in this game, but I think it's just going to be Brexit. It's generally going to be 2 4-4-2s, probably about one shot on target all game, and it'll probably come from about 40 yards out. Just
football we love to see.
Jack Cork picking it up, thinking, oh, we'll take a ping from here. Maybe Doucouré will get a penalty or something. It's honestly, like, that's probably the one game I will just refuse to watch.
Taylor, are you in a similar mindset here?
I'll give it a credit. Since Craig Dawson's going to have head kick, Burnley might have a little bit of, you know, ability to score one goal. So I went 1-0 Watford, and it's going to be your man, Deeney, that will get the goal. Whether that is a penalty, tap-in, 90th minute winner, first minute opener, I don't know. But Sean Dyche, Nigel Pearson, are just two teams, Watford, Burnley, Brexit. Brexit.
What else can you say? They're so similar.
Burnley have just kind of gotten their place in the league now, isn't it? That's it. We're staying up. We're not challenging for Europe. We're just happy. Let's just put the players out there and just let them run about a wee bit.
Let them earn part of the living at least.
Yeah, I just refuse to think Nigel Pearson is a good manager. I just refuse to accept it. Honestly.
No. I can't agree with that. I think he's good. I think he's good as what he does.
I think he's fantastic at keeping the team up. I don't know what he does in those big games, but I think he just drills it. Like against Watford, when they'd conceded right at the end to Leicester, it was almost like, oh, what a bad loss. And I was like, hang on, they're getting something from, oh my goodness, a bicycle kick from
Craig
a corner.
Dawson.
Yeah. That game was one of the examples as well of absolutely nothing happened all 90 minutes and then two wonder goals.
Yeah.
And you just think, well, why have you not been trying that earlier?
I was like, because I didn't have BT, I was watching the Brentford game, Brentford Fulham at the same time, and it was the exact same situation. Sat watching 89th minute, I think it was Benrahma opened the scoring, and then 2 minutes later they got a second. It was the exact same situation.
The floodgates have opened.
Floodgates have opened, and they've got two goals in 2 minutes.
I think that's what's been one of the main problems with the games in the first week back, and it's very similar to the Bundesliga. You know, it's just so boring the first half; nothing's really happening, and then you know a goal can change it. And I think that's what's helped City. They seem to get the early goals,
mm-hmm.
and then from there they just get the confidence. They just keep going. I mean, even Liverpool Everton was probably up there with the most boring game of the weekend last week. But I think this coming week's fixtures will be a lot more entertaining, except Brexit game,
right? Just to wrap up today's show, we are going to be bringing back the Fantasy Team of the Week. This is where all of our hosts chip in with their suggestions for each position on the pitch, as this can include players from teams we haven't discussed thus far, and we'll give you a bit of an explanation as to why we've picked them. Starting off with keepers, I've going to put three down. I've put Pope and Foster, because Brexit 0-0.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put Pickford because Everton are playing away to Norwich and Norwich just looked, in a word, pathetic against Southampton, which is not a nice thing to say, but they're resigned. Like, they're gone.
They are awful.
Am I missing anyone there for a goalkeeper? Is anyone else?
I put Loris because West Ham, David Moyes, attacking doesn't go well.
I can understand that.
Maybe Emi Martinez from Arsenal. I presume he's going to have to play without Leno.
Arsenal.
And he's probably a cheap option.
He's a cheap option. Really? But
yeah, that's true.
Southampton looked good. Southampton looked fit.
Yeah, they looked sharp.
Against Norwich, but I suppose...
I think Ings will run rings around that defence.
Ings running rings. I like that.
What's the odds of David Luiz starting?
Well,
sorry?
I don't think
the odds of David Luiz starting?
I think he's still suspended, but...
Well, it depends. I don't know. No, I don't think he will be. Will he?
I think it's a... Is it not a three match if you get a straight red? No, it's a second yellow we got.
No, it was sick.
It's
suspended. Suspended
till the 1st of July. Yeah. I mean, I don't think that's going to cause Mikel Arteta any loss of sleep.
No.
I don't think he'll be...
To answer your question, I don't think there is much of a chance.
It sure does.
We'll speak about the defenders. Again, Everton, Burnley and Watford picks all decent. Burnley and Watford particularly because they'll be cheap and you can distribute your money elsewhere. I chuck Chilwell's name in the mix just because even in a game where he's playing fairly poorly, he could still pop up with a moment of brilliance at the end like he did against
Watford.
Yeah,
imagine predicting Chilwell would be man in a match and the right result, eh? Imagine
that, Taylor.
I know, imagine.
Taylor, you genuinely... I'll talk about this quickly because we're running a predictions league between the six hosts and we're getting 2 points for the right result and an extra point if you get the exact score. You're sitting joint third with Jamie, but you only got, like, I don't know, four or like half the results right, but you got exact results right so much that you ended up just propping yourself up.
Oh god, no way.
Stream, I'll not mention yours.
I backed Arsenal, that's all you need to Stream, know.
You get 7 points.
Oh no.
Maximum was what, 36? No. 3 times 12, 36. Yeah, Jesus.
That was good. I nearly got the Spurs one correct, but when Eric Dyer took out Pogba.
I've also chucked in Spurs defenders as well, like Taylor said, for West Ham, because they just don't look very good in award. Am I missing anyone there, boys? Is there anyone?
I chucked in Fernandes from Newcastle, just because they're playing Aston Villa.
That's a good shout, actually.
That was a good shout. Like I'd agree with Tottenham. I've said Dyer will be man of the match for me. He's really good against United, and I just think it'll be a very compact shape again. I don't think he'll have any troubles dealing with that West Ham attack.
Midfield, we'll move on to. I put Bruno or Pogba, but depending on whether Pogba will start, Bruno's probably a dead cert, so yeah, I'd fire him in your team. One of my favourite players in the league, Big Al, Big Al and St Maximan. the man that I was so impressed with, I wrote my takeaway for him for Energy Sport. He was my focus of the weekend. I chucked in Phil Foden just for a cheap option. I'm not sure if he'd start against Chelsea, but going forward, he might be a good inclusion considering the squad rotation is going to be a key part to the league. And I put Christian Pulisic because I'm certain he'll start, and he really came on and made the difference against Aston Villa, where it was a game that was screaming out for a player like him. Boys, anyone else you'd suggest?
I'd agree with Pulisic. I've had him as the man of the match in the 2-1 prediction. I think he'll be very good. And I think picking someone like Bruno's good as well, because he's the penalty taker.
Yeah.
I think that's always a useful point. I've kept Sal in my team, which may be a bit worrying so given he missed the Everton game, but I think he'll be okay against Crystal Palace. I hope he'll be playing anyway.
God, I hope he's playing.
And then I've kept Mahrez and De Bruyne, because I just think Mahrez is unbelievable. And well, De Bruyne kind of speaks for himself this season. He'll be wanting to break that Henry record, which I'm sure he will. I think they'll both play
How
somewhat.
How many did you offer?
What, was he on just now, 18?
He's on 16 at the moment.
Is it 16? I thought it was more than that, you know.
I think it's 16. Hang on.
Let me check. Stats check. Oh, it's 16. Oh, VR. Yeah, there we are.
Come on.
Awarded.
And what was Henry's 20?
Henry's the 20, yeah.
Yeah, so I think he'll get that easily. And given 7 games left.
I'd agree with your Mahrez pick, definitely. Micah Richards was saying last night after the Burnley game that Mahrez is a must start for City now.
Yeah, I think you could argue he's their best winger. I really, really do. I think he's just phenomenal. Yeah. 8 games they've got left, sorry, not 7.
Taylor, any midfielders you'd want to throw in the mix for?
I've got De Bruyne, Fernandes, got Mane in there. I still have Grealish in there, mostly because I don't know if I should put Fleck in instead of Grealish or that. But yeah, because if anything does come from Sheffield United, it's got to be from probably Fleck. But I think I end up sticking with Grealish just in case Aston Villa do anything.
It's because the same argument can be made for Grealish at Villa. Like, if anything Villa do is going to come through one of Grealish or McGinn, realistically.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, we'll look at our striking options. I've put down Jamie Vardy, just under £10 million, but he will be chasing his 100th Premier League goal. I chucked Rashford in. That was a personal thing, just because I think he's probably going to get a decent game against Sheffield United. And I wasn't going to let this go again. I'm backing Jordan Ayew once again.
Oh, but I'm
asking
blame you, by
you once again to back Jordan Ayew.
Against Liverpool?
Yes. Against anyone. Jordan Ayew.
To be fair, if Lovren is playing.
If Lovren is, but oh God. That's a good point, actually. If he comes on, Jordan Ayew will be rubbing his hands together. He'll be buzzing.
Just avoid that Dutch fellow. I'll be going for the other boy.
Ayew is 5.4 million and he's got a very decent return. He's got 9 goals in 29 games, which maybe isn't fantastic for a top level striker, but he's not at a top level club realistically. He's at Palace, which they are potentially the most underrated team in the league considering how well Hodgson's got them running.
I'd go with that.
Yeah, so yeah. I think he's a good shout for it. But any other suggestions there?
I've gone with Vardy as well. I had to take Aguero out and I've put him in. Maybe someone like Tammy Abraham. I think he would play ahead of Giroud in this game. And I do like the Ayew suggestion, I have to say. And I've actually just looked at the table. Crystal Palace's form is the exact same as Tottenham's. 11 wins, 9 draws, 10 losses.
Really?
Which is pretty impressive. They've got a far worse goal difference. But
still.
It's a very good form. I'd definitely agree the most underrated side in the league this season.
Yeah, well, they're on 4 wins, 4 clean sheets, and basically, if they're looking to just extend that. But I would go with... my front three is like something I've never had before. And okay. It's like... basically, 3 players that are not from any of the top teams. I've got Ings in because, you know, Arsenal, and we all know Arsenal just can't defend, so he will get a goal.
Yep.
I've got Jota on the left because Jota with Wilson has been incredible, and since him and Jimenez have basically started cutting together more with Traore, it looks like he's been basically influential as well on the left.
Yeah.
And Jimenez up front, he is incredible. I genuinely think he is my fantasy love this. Everybody likes Lundstrom. Jimenez is just unreal. Like, the points he gets and the goals he scores are just, as you said earlier, so simple. But he's also reliable, and I've made him my captain.
Good shout. I mean, he's played 14 goals, and he's really the focal point of Wolves' attack. He's definitely worth a punt on. Well, that brings us to the end of episode 6 of the Fantasy Ramble. A big thank you to you, listener, for tuning in. If you are on Spotify, feel free to follow us so you don't miss another episode of the show. We're going to be bringing them thick and fast as the Premier League continues to go on through the summer. We'll be back with a new episode on Friday discussing a bit more of a stretched out game week considering we've got FA Cup quarterfinals to be playing at the same time. Again, join the league with the code X1LJML. Follow us on Twitter at Fantasy Ramble. Struan, Taylor, thank you both very much for joining me today. I've been Jack Donnelly. This has been Energy's Fantasy Ramble, and we will see you next time. Cheers.